And a warm welcome to another episode of the SRUC podcast. I'm Adam Masri, veterinary lecturer here at SRUC's School of Veterinary Medicine, and this episode has an important theme. It's the celebration of women in the veterinary profession. My guest today is Dr. Shireen Williams, Senior Manager of Global Animal Health at the International Equine Charity, Brook. Thank you kindly for giving up your time to speak to me today, Shireen, and please tell us a bit about yourself and your career to date.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Adam. It's a real pleasure to be here, so exciting, and to be part of your educational podcast. So as you said, my name is Shireen Williams, and I am a veterinary surgeon, and I graduated from Nottingham Vet School way back now in 2011. So I was actually in the first year to go through the vet school. So certainly, yeah, so my part of what we called the guinea pig year at the time. But yeah, had a really wonderful experience at Nottingham and was really proud to be part of the first year. I feel that we kind of helped shape the teaching and had a really wonderful experience. And then since then, my first job was at the Equine Welfare Organisation based in Norfolk, in the UK, called Red Wings. And that was a really wonderful charity that works on rehoming and rescuing and sort of welfare cases alongside the RSPCA, both horses and donkeys. And my role was very much in the equine hospital. So I learned an awful lot there, which was amazing. I then had a few years in mixed practice in Bedfordshire. And then I had an amazing year of backpacking and not working as a vet at all. I know, which isn't maybe the best advert for the profession, but it was really wonderful to have that year off or away from sort of working with animals and experiencing them in different countries while I was backpacking across Asia and Africa. But I was also very happy to get back to work, and I did then work in Australia. So I worked in Melbourne in small animal practice for a year before I saw what really could only be described really as my dream job being advertised for the Brook, which is an equine, as you mentioned, an equine health and welfare organisation that works internationally. So we work all over the world with some of the 112 million working equids. So those are horses, donkeys and mules that really have a job. So they could be used for transport, for traction, for water collection. Sometimes they're used in brick kilns or in coal mines. Essentially, a lot of places in the world where there isn't mechanized transport, working equids are filling that gap and consequently are pivotal to developing to sort of people in lower middle income countries and developing nations. And yeah, so my role really there is that I'm part of a global team of vets who teach and train local vets within those countries. So yeah, we don't go in and treat things necessarily ourselves other than in emergencies, but we really support the local vets who are already there, or sometimes the animal health practitioners who might be sort of para vets that have had 1 or 2 years training. We support them to improve their clinical knowledge, their clinical skills, and essentially we've just really work as a team to try and solve some of the really big problems that are faced when practicing veterinary medicine in a low resource setting. And yeah, I've been there almost 8 or 9 years now.
Wow, that's a fascinating career there, Shireen, and I know that charity has been really quite close to your heart, and I suppose through education you're almost positively influencing all those other animals through it with education.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Vets treat more than one species, and animal welfare matters to all animals, not just equids. So yeah, very much within the health team, so within the veterinary team at Brook, we see our work as multi-species, and what we do, you know, teaching somebody to do or to improve their technique on IV injections benefits more than just the donkey, it's all the other animals they're injecting as well. So yeah, it's a really interesting role that I treasure very deeply.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Shireen. And as you know, we had International Women's Day there back in March, and it's a day where we celebrated the amazing achievements of women everywhere. And I was back home in Dublin recently, and I was in a bookshop looking for a story for my little ones, and I came across a beautifully illustrated book called The Wonder Vet, The Amazing Adventures of Aline Cust, written by Jennifer Farley. And it's a wonderful and inspirational story, and it really highlighted what a brave trailblazer and pioneer Aline Cust truly was. But for those who aren't familiar, Aline Cust became the first female veterinary surgeon in Ireland and in Great Britain in 1923. But she faced some difficult obstacles along the way. And I'll just give you a little bit of background. Aline was born in County Tipperary in Ireland in 1868. And in 1894, going against the wishes of her family and the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, she started her studies in Edinburgh's new veterinary college, where she excelled and even winning a gold medal in zoology. She completed her course in 1900, but was not allowed to sit her final exams, simply because she was female. Aline did receive, however, a letter of recommendation from the college principal, and this did allow her to work as a veterinary assistant back in Ireland with a vet called Willie Byrne, and she soon gained the love and respect of the local clientele. And in 1915, when World War I broke out, Aline decided to play a role and drove across to France to volunteer with the veterinary corps, tending to the wounded war horses, a bit like you, Shireen, with Brooke. And back then, horses played a pivotal role in society. And believe it or not, she still wasn't recognised professionally by the British Army. And then the Sex Disqualification Act of 1919 came into law, and the RCVS, or the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, could no longer refuse to recognise Aline's right to practice veterinary medicine. And in 1922, she was finally allowed to sit her exams, and she received her diploma, becoming the first female veterinary surgeon in Ireland and Great Britain, and actually some maybe even think in Europe. And I do think, speaking here with you today, Shireen, and listening to your wonderful veterinary career to date, Aline Cust would be very proud. And adding to that, another fantastic cause of celebration would be that Scotland's newest vet school here at SRUC in Aberdeen has Professor Caroline Argo at the helm as its dean, which is also fantastic. And another recent achievement that I came across recently while listening to the news was that of Dr. Jasmine Paris, again, a veterinary surgeon currently working at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies in Edinburgh, who has become the first woman to complete the grueling Barclay Marathon, one of the toughest sporting challenges that takes place and is held in Tennessee. She's a record-breaking ultra-runner, and she definitely cemented her place in the history books by finishing this 100-mile race within its strict 60-hour time limit. And apparently they're not even allowed to use GPS or watches, and so it's some achievement. And listening to those stories, Shireen, I wanted to just explore in particular the role that women play in the veterinary profession. And after hearing Aline Cust's story, how does her remarkable journey resonate with you on a personal level?
I mean, wow. To all of those women that you just mentioned, Adam. I mean, it is remarkable, isn't it? I mean, yeah, three really, yeah, amazing stories and contributions as vets to society, but also as women too. And yeah, I guess what really strikes me in particular the story of Aline Cust is, I mean, what an amazing woman, and also how it is really not that long ago, is it? It's really not that long, you know. Building, I don't think my house is a similar, it's older than that. And do you think that is happening not that long ago? And I think it's really, it's not easy to train to be a vet or to work as a vet. But I mean, wow, her drive and determination to overcome so many obstacles during that time is completely wondrous. And certainly on a personal note, you mentioned there her traveling to France to treat war horses. And certainly like what that, you know, that war was pretty much known as like great, the war of great men, and men were out there on the frontiers fighting for at the time another man, king and country. And so to have, and we, but yet we know that women played such an important role in the war that is often they're not included or they're not written into history. And this is a really sad but sort of poignant example of that. And I think it really resonates again because Brooke, the organization I worked for, was founded by a woman and actually was founded at the end of the First World War because she, Dorothy Brooke, became aware of the really poor conditions and the plight of the horses that had finished and survived fighting the World War, but no provision was made to bring them home. And so that is really the origins of Brooke that also started, also started by a woman who, again, I think was very much ahead of her time. And do you think what these women overcame to follow their passion, in this case, to help animals, is really monumentous? And I think many days, but particularly around International Women's Day, I always reflect on a verse that I really love by the poet Rupi Kaur. And it's and she says that I stand on the sacrifices of a million women before me, thinking, what can I do to make this mountain taller so the women after me can see further?
Wow, that's very powerful. Yeah.
And I just think, like, I feel so, on a personal note, a personal and professional note, I just feel so incredibly grateful for Eileen, and also a huge responsibility to contribute to improve things for women going forward.
No, wow. Yeah, no. And thank you for sharing that, Shireen, especially your personal thoughts. And as you said, thankfully, we've come a long way. But it doesn't seem that really, it's not that long ago when you think about it. But do you think that there are still firm obstacles facing women in the veterinary profession, you know, stopping us climb that mountain?
And I would say yes. I mean, we have come a long way, and it is always important to celebrate success. And again, how you started this conversation, we can really celebrate how far we have come in not that long, and those amazing women that have sort of pioneered things to be better for us. But I can't help but think that if you asked members of the public to close their eyes and think of a vet, I have a feeling that many would possibly see a checked or a stripy shirt. They might see a gilet, certain brand of wellies might come to mind, maybe a white coat and a stethoscope. But I do think that many people would still be imagining a white man. And I think that for many female vets, and so myself included, we would have experienced comments as to whether we were the nurses or the receptionists, questions around if you're strong enough to be doing that, is it safe to be doing that? And comments also on appearance, so certainly hair, makeup, outfits, that I, while not meant always maliciously, in fact very often not meant maliciously, but I would say not necessarily experienced by or commonly experienced by male colleagues. So I think that while things have come a long way, I'm not sure that we can yet say that things would be equal. And so while the number of female vets has dramatically increased, we will still see senior clinicians, policymakers, and prominent academics will continue to be, or that those fields could be dominated by men, certainly globally. And we can reflect on what that sort of set out might still look like within the UK. And so certainly within my work at Brooke, we are looking at this more globally. And globally, only 25% of countries' chief veterinary officers are women. But that does include the UK's wonderful chief veterinary officer at the moment, Dr. Christine Middlemiss. And then also, if you think you mentioned yourself there, if we look at the UK vet schools, only I think 3 of the 11 current school deans are women, which does include your own, which is fantastic. But obviously, we're not at par. And I think historically, that would have even been skewed further. So what has been particularly worrying for me has also to see and experience a very real gender pay gap.
I'm just going to say that was one example I'd be familiar with from working in practice.
And I think so last year, I think it's probably something that a lot of us think might be happening, but I think maybe because of the way so many of us we're there for the animals, aren't we? And while it is our profession and it is our means to pay bills, we're possibly not the best profession in general at advocating or discussing things like pay and working conditions. But I think last year the BBC published the 10 employers in the UK with the highest pay gap towards men. So it's the whole, all companies above a certain size, but all companies in the UK, 4 of the top 10 were veterinary corporates, with 2 of those being second and third. And that's, all companies, not just, it was quite shocking, but I guess also not that surprising. So I think it really just highlights that we have come a long way, but there is still a lot more to do.
Gosh, those stats speak for themselves, Shireen. Yeah. So what do you, in your opinion, can be done to protect welfare of women in the veterinary profession?
Yeah, I think, conversations like this are a wonderful starting place, aren't they? I think accepting and normalizing that there are still some very real challenges within the profession in treating men and women equally. And sort of personally, I would feel that the narrative around the sort of high numbers of female vets, therefore, we must be, we must have reached equality. I think that isn't, and I think we can see even just from those, a bit of data there, that that's not the case. But I think there is a lot to celebrate, and we are doing extremely well at getting girls into science and getting them into vet school. But what I think we need to make sure that that is translating into women remaining and excelling within the profession. And so for me, areas such as ensuring that there are more women in leadership roles and prominent visible ones too.
I think that's for role modeling, Shireen. Is that what you mean? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think I'm a huge believer in you have to be able to see it to believe it. And I think we need it to be representative, don't we? We can't, it's very well saying, this X number of girls and women are entering the profession, but are they getting to the higher echelons or the high paid jobs or the management roles or the heads of vet schools and that in the same quantities as their male colleagues. And I do also think, better parental leave policies and a more sort of flexible approach to working where possible, I think are all important conversations to have, to be honest, for men and women. But importantly, I think the industry as a whole needs to be given support in addressing sexism and misogyny when we're exposed to it, as it can't just be down to women. We really need men to play a crucial role in addressing this, calling this out and sort of supporting women. But I think we work with the general public, don't we? So I think that is always going to bring challenges, and sort of the wider issues within society of sexism and misogyny are likely to come through our consult door. And we need to support young women in particular, but I think women and men to be able to deal with that as a profession.
Yeah, and I think another, just from a personal example, again, in terms of protecting welfare, would be something as simple, because I know, again, lots of women come to return to work after maternity leave and they are still breastfeeding. Having a safe environment just for expressing, I think, would be something would be much appreciated, because I have felt for colleagues in that situation, running off between consults, or after the consult between starting the ROPS, and I did feel. So I think that would be one thing.
I mean, that is also very topical for me, Adam, because as you know, I'm returning to work after the birth of my second child, and I am still breastfeeding, and my partner and I, who's actually also a vet, we share our parental leave, so everybody's entitled to a year off. That's sort of legislated within law, and you can share that. So I sort of take usually this, so we did this with our first child as well, but I take sort of the first 6 or 7 months, and then he takes the rest of the year. So that does mean that, yeah, at sort of 8 months old now, I'm going back to work, and having just gone into the office for the first time last week, we have exactly what you mentioned. So we have a room that quite simply has a plug, a comfortable chair, a blackout blind, and a lock, and that can also be used for a variety of reasons. It's called a mindfulness room. I'd say the addition of having that room has enabled me to actually go back to work sooner than I would have been able to otherwise, because it just wouldn't have been possible to be able to be feeding and to be that far away and that kind of thing. So yeah, just that kind of inclusivity, I think, and that thought for female specific problems, but female specific issues.
Right, yeah, lifestyles. Yeah, exactly.
I think would go a long way to maybe supporting women in the workplace, and sort of being able to be loud and proud about wanting to have children and having them, and being able to be both like a fantastic parent and also a fantastic vet, and being able to be seen as a valuable asset to that veterinary practice or wherever you work, as well as a mother, not just sort of somebody that's going to need to have some time off in the school holidays or, you know, leave at 3 to go and pick children up. I think practices and workplaces need to work with women and men, parents in general, to find workable solutions.
I really happy to hear that, Shireen, that's been facilitated there at your workplace. Again, and as a veterinary student in Dublin, that the vast majority of my fellow students were women, and as the years have progressed, that number has grown. And even in practice now, I've worked in a practice where I was the only male vet, and this must make you proud, Shireen, does it?
I mean, I hope that you didn't feel left out as the only
not at all. It was great,
because I think diversity in all aspects is so important, but absolutely. I mean, the fact that within 20 minutes of speaking, we started this conversation talking about an incredible struggle of one woman to be acknowledged for the work that she was actually already doing. And now we're talking about, potentially are we having too many women in the profession? Like what a huge turnaround. And so absolutely, it does make me really proud, and I think it means that so many young girls are seeing female and male vets and thinking that that's a job that I want to do, and those barriers faced by Eileen are largely been removed, and that is something absolutely to celebrate. I think probably what would be less proud of would be the other aspects of diversity within the profession that I know are both close to both of our hearts. And so thinking about vets that identify as BAME, or also from lower income families, that's a bit harder to to think about, or to, we're not there yet on those other aspects for sure. But yeah, 85% is something to celebrate. And I think there is also an interesting conversation happening about the feminization of the profession, and maybe that is for another day. But I do, when sort of thinking about that and sort of participating in those discussions, I do like to think particularly about a Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote. So I'm big on quotes. I love
one. I'm all ears, Serena. I'm all ears.
So when she was asked about when will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? So this is the US Supreme Court, of which she was one woman. She answers that, so when will there be enough women on the court? She answers, when there are nine, as there have been nine men and nobody ever raised a question about that. So yeah, which I just think is interesting, isn't it? It's something for us to think about.
No, that's a good one. Yeah, no, I think I can see the. No, I have a young daughter, and the fact that this profession is changing, and if she wishes to be a part of it, that's something to celebrate in the future. And then that brings me on to my last question, Shireen. What would be your advice to a young woman considering a career in veterinary medicine?
I mean, I would say do it, definitely. But I would say to be yourself, of which your gender is only one part. And I think the veterinary profession really does need to diversify and be more inclusive on many fronts. But part of doing that is trying to change the public and I think our own profession's image of what a good vet looks like. So I would say not to spend your energy on trying to look or sound or act like an outdated stereotype, and instead put that energy into improving animal health and welfare and finding the area of the profession that fulfills you.
Yes, that's a good answer. Just being the vet that you want to be, or you see yourself being, not as you say, not comparing yourself to maybe an outdated stereotype. No, thank you, Shireen. That's been very insightful. Before I finish, just please bear with me while I read out a short disclaimer. Just wanted to say that the views, thoughts and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent the views, thoughts and opinions of Scotland's Rural College. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only, not professional advice, and that Scotland's Rural College, the name and all forms and abbreviations are the property of its owner, and its use does not imply endorsement of or opposition to any specific organisation, product or service. So thank you for bearing with me, Shireen, for that. But that brings us to the end of our discussion. Once again, I'd like to say a very big thank you to you, Shireen, for giving up your time and for sharing your thoughts and anecdotes with me. I hope to chat to you again soon, and I hope you the listeners have enjoyed the podcast, and thank you for your time again, Shireen. And I really appreciate that, and it's been a real pleasure.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for having me, Adam.
No, it's been great. Night, Nigeria. Thank you again.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.